Welcome to the podcast service of La Civiltà Cattolica. My name is Michael Kelly and I'm the publisher of the English language edition. Today's topic is synodality, and it's the talk of the town. It's the big topic that Pope Francis has been promoting and that is all around the place. But what we want to have a look at is just what it means. What does synodality mean? And we've gone to talk to some people, firstly, because there are others going to come in this series, who are actually involved in the practice of it. We want to start in Australia and then go to Germany, because they're the two countries where national conversations of a synodal style are going ahead. And today, we're doing this podcast with three participants from Australia: Lana Turvey Collins, who is the key facilitator of discussions leading to and then conducted during the Plenary Council, as it's called in Australia; Sister Patty Faulkner, who's the leader of an Australian-founded Benedictine congregation called the Good Samaritan Sisters. She's an adult educator with tertiary qualifications in arts, education, theology and spirituality; Father Frank Brennan, who's a Jesuit and rector of the University College at Melbourne University that is in the hands of the Jesuits, called Newman College; and then there's me, Michael Kelly.
So I put it to particularly, say, Lana, who's been dealing with this process at a national level in Australia. What have we learnt so far about the complexities of this sort of conversation and the conduct of it, and what are the smart ways to do it, and what are the dumb and self-destructive ways to do it?
Thanks, Father Michael. I think probably the first thing that I have learned in over the 3.5 years that I've been in this role of facilitating the process has been that we need to very much get better at talking to one another across divides. I think the Catholic Church is so broad, and the diversity that is in Australia is not necessarily something that is used to interconnecting with one another. My experience of 3 years has sort of been that people are very comfortable in their own patch and find that they're attracted to environments of like with like. And that's wonderful. It's nourishing, it's formative. But unless you deliberately put yourself into a space that is not comfortable, that is has thoughts and ways of understanding things and lived experiences that is very different than your own, I guess I would say just personally that it would be limiting for our growth as the way in which we are able to express an Australian faith. And so couple that with the fact that faith and religion is so deeply a part of someone's identity, and it's filled with passion and energy. And then so when you do come up against something that is somebody who's just as passionate, just as energetic, and they're very different from you, then that becomes heated. And so finding discernment as a way of engaging with one another is something that I think is certainly the core of what we've been trying to do over the last 3 years: dialogue with one another gently and discernment, but without losing the capacity to speak truth. It doesn't mean not being able to say to one another, I disagree with you. So I hear something very different in what you're saying. The thing for me, I guess, is that we need to learn to get better at saying, so help me understand how you come to that place, without judgment and without dislike. I find it really hard personally. You know, it's not so comfortable for me to talk to somebody who is, I know, is really different than me. And I certainly really struggle to say, you know, I love you enough to be in deep conversation with you about something such as faith or religion or the way in which we understand God in the world.
All right. Can we just stop there, because we'll come back to a lot of the things that you've said there, Lana. We'll come back to discernment and engagement and listening and all that. But just for starters, maybe Patty and Frank have a few observations that you'd like to make.
Yes, I'd agree with a lot of what Lana said. I think discernment is not easy, because I think it's an ongoing call to conversion. And I think the hardest conversion is to change my way of thinking and to be open. And I think what makes it so hard is that there's a lot of fear about, I think. And I think there's fear in some quarters of losing control, you know, losing perhaps status. I think in other quarters there's fear of, oh, we're going to be disappointed yet again. I think there's, I think a real issue in all of this is trying to not handle but manage expectations of what can be achieved. And I think what happens, I can be fearful when someone disagrees with me, if I got the words to come back. And I think what we do then is collapse the argument by labelling the other who thinks differently with me, by labelling, putting a label on, because it is hard yakka, hard work to expand my horizon of thinking. And I can only do that if I genuinely listen, but also genuinely listen to my own passion. We keep being told that we've got to listen, but also we've got to be helped to speak my truth, not in an aggressive way, but yeah. And I think if there's real dialogue, I think the conversion is that we, each of us, changes our way of thinking. And perhaps it's even thinking about the other.
Okay, they're the obstacles to engagement and the obstacles to progress. What do you think we've got going for us positively that can work and can take this conversation in a positive direction? Because we've heard there are blockages. We've heard, you know, we're not good at some things, but we are good at other things. And, you know, we have been through a very deep and very demanding process over the last 50 years of taking this age-old thing called Catholicism, adapt it to its new context and try to seek and find a mission for our community and our community's beliefs. Now, what are the good things going for us? Not just how stupid are we, not just how obtuse are we, not just how deaf are we, but what are the good things going for us?
I was recently, spent a couple of days in the Diocese of Port Pirie, and was giving a few talks at their Diocesan Pastoral Council. I think about 150 people present. Now, they've been doing it year in and year out, probably for 20 years. But it was a fabulous couple of days. Now, it'd be one of the most under-resourced dioceses in the country. But you have people there. I mean, there weren't arguments about theological issues or whatever. It was a true celebration of the church of the diocese. And I think those sorts of things are going for us. Just recently also, I was involved with a big conference up there in the Diocese of Lismore. Once again, a country diocese, but where they brought together all the key educators of the diocese, and once again, true engagement. So I think we Australians, we're good at being able to engage despite the differences that exist. One of the impediments we do face, and this is the lawyer in me, and Lana's heard me on this before, the last thing we needed was a plenary council according to canonic provisions, because that means the clergy basically have to control it. Well, that's not going to get us anywhere. But even the clergy who are going to be there, most of them get that and understand that. So I think we're also good at moving beyond the formalism. We're able to get together and say, well, look, whatever of the formalities and the legalities, that's not going to get us anywhere. Let's really engage and be attentive to each other's life experiences and the reflection on those experiences. And I think we're good at that. The other thing is that I think we have suffered as church with loss of respect of tradition, institution, authority. That's happened in our society generally with every major institution, whether it's the military or the banks or those who deliver disability services or whatever. So even though people might say we're not very churchy nowadays, nonetheless, the lived experience within the institution is the same as the lived experience that we have in society generally. And so I think we do have the capacity to bring that and to say, right, in the light of faith, where do we find hope? And hopefully we will ensure that it will be an incarnation of the life of the church where women will not only have a place at the table, but their voices will be heard at least 50% of the time.
Okay, thanks, Frank. That's a constructive step forward. The word that's been thrown around and it's regularly used in these contexts is discernment. And yet it's a very, you know, ambiguous word. Let's just try and drill down and find out what it actually means. For me, discernment essentially means listening to and reading the voice of God in a community. That seems to me to be what discernment is. Now, that's not about finding out who's got the numbers to pull off a vote or set an orientation and make us all fit with it. How do other people describe discernment?
I'd like to come in there. Sometimes I think people seem to think that the Jesuits have a monopoly on with St. Ignatius discernment. And of course, there's a strong Benedictine.
Okay.
A strong Benedictine tradition of discernment. And in Benedict's rule, Benedict says, look, when you've got the important things to talk about, bring everyone together. The less important, have a body of seniors. And he also says, and you've got to listen to the sort of the wisdom coming from the most unlikely source. In his case, it's the wisdom of the young. Listen to the young voices in a very, you know, sort of a culture that honoured the aged. And I think the Benedictine tradition says everyone has a piece of the wisdom. So how do you... And the word discernment means to sift. How do you sift through, you know, the different perspectives? And then I think it's not so much a democratic process, but to constantly say, what are we as a group hearing? And some things actually drift away. Somebody can be very, very forceful, but... You know, some things can float away because it doesn't have the support. It doesn't seem to capture the energy of the group. So I think, I suppose just picking up on what Frank was saying before, I think the discernment, we really have to listen to such a variety of voices and perspectives. And I think the whole discussion in society about, you know, sort of issues of gender, I think we have to listen to, you know, people of different experience of sexuality, of gender, different, the Indigenous voice, the voices of women, not just the churchy types. I just think we have to listen to what our country and what our world is saying.
Thanks, Patty. Lana, what would you drill down to in using the word discernment?
I think I've sort of tried to break this down a lot with young people, and they tell me that it's as simple as trying to get God to help you make good decisions, and so not being totally human about the decisions that are being made, and not being, obviously being human, we can't be totally divine, but making sure that God leads the way. And so using scripture for inspiration, getting all the facts and figures, you know, reading the documents that are going to give you good intellectual wisdom, but also putting aside your ego. And one young woman in a college in Brisbane, when they were doing this dialogue of discernment together, she said it's the first time that she really has felt that she's had time and space to speak, reflect, and then speak differently. So be changed, the change of heart that Patty was talking about earlier. Because of what the group shared, and she thinks that that was the movement of, that's what she called the movement of God in the circle, or the movement of the spirit in discernment, you know, we would call it. So I do think it's as simple and as complex of trying to be human and divine in our faith and make communal decisions that are going to move us forward for mission. I think the key part of discernment for me is that there's a really clear question that you're trying to answer together. And so that is, that's going to be critical for the council as well.
Frank, have you got anything to say?
I do, actually. I think we're all in favour of making prudent and sensible decisions, and whether we're in the church or in society or whatever. And anyone who doesn't want to make prudent and sensible decisions needs to wake up to themselves. And if we're friendly with them, we can tell them to do that. But given we want to make prudent and sensible decisions, we also want to make decisions which are hopeful. We want to make decisions which are loving. We want to make decisions which are faithful. And ultimately, we want to see ourselves as making decisions together as the community, as the body of Christ. And we want to see ourselves making decisions which are actually responses to invitations by the Spirit. And that then becomes discernment. So it's not only about making good and sensible decisions. It's not only about being virtuous. It's also about being truly responsive to God's action in our lives, individually, collectively, in our world. And doing that is always, I think, a process of discernment.
Mm. Which needs time and space. You know, it's not something that happens in a two-hour workshop in an afternoon.
It's time and space, and it needs trust. Just before I came on, because I'm at a university college, so I asked a young person before I came on, I said, you know, what do you think I should talk about? He said, look, don't talk about any of those issues, you know, the red flag issues you always want to fight about. He said, no one's interested in terms of young people are not interested. But what you've got to do is you've got to show us how we can be formed, whether or not we're clerics or whatever, how we can be formed as the people of God. And we do that together. I mean, can this gathering be an exemplar, be a sacrament of what it is that we say it is to be church together?
Can I just bring in something that picks up what we were saying earlier? One of the things that irritates me most about people's discussion of discernment is that basically it's an escape from making a decision. People prattle on about discernment. You mentioned the Jesuits and that the Jesuits have a mortgage on the word. Well, I can tell you, having been a Jesuit for now over 50 years, that the Jesuits are about the worst bloody discerners you'll ever meet in your life. They're absolutely bloody hopeless because they run away from the simple fact that discernment is about making a decision. Now, if you're going to make a decision, you actually have to have some choices. You actually have to have some options. They have to be able to choose between things that some people are proposing and some things that other people are proposing. And they might be conflictive. They might be very different, and they might be things that half the room or even more don't want to have anything to do with. Now, I think if we become realistic about discernment, we're going to go into what has to happen when any decision-making process is considered, and that is that people will argue and disagree and will passionately hold different persuasions. And we have to be realistic about that, and we have to be realistic about how we help people move through and beyond fixed positions, that they stand there and say, thus far and no further, and if you say that, I'm walking out, or whatever rubbish they want to do. And I think if we do that, if we turn around and say, look, we're going to take people's real convictions and real beliefs and real forces very seriously, then we're actually going to have to realise that the process will lead to some sort of compromise. We have to be in a situation where we say, yeah, well, I'm not going to get my way. What I'm going to find is our way. And that is actually the object of discernment. And discernment therefore requires us being alert and attentive, not only to one another, but to the key thing that discerning in God's presence does, which is which ways of acting and moving bring you peace, conviction, and stability, because they're the hallmarks of the movement of the Spirit, particularly peace. And if you turn around and say, okay, you know, you're proposing X, I'm proposing Y, someone else is proposing Z, we can slice and dice, or we can just, you know, spend a bit of time going into why are you proposing that? What are you actually trying to achieve? What are you proposing as the pathway out of the containment we're in? What are you proposing as the way out of irreconcilable differences and basically conflict and all that? What's the next step we can take together?
I reckon you're right, Michael. I think sometimes it's a lack of courage. You know, we always say it has to take time, but you can't wait till everyone gets on the bus, because you'll never make a decision about anything. And sometimes I think the discerning question to ask is, look, Can you live with this? Can you live with this? You know, and sometimes it takes real courage to make a decision and say, well, let's try this and let's give it a go, because you can just go round and round in circles endlessly. And I think it can be a cowardly position to take, to not decide on something.
Yep.
I think always, you know, this is where, you know, management and faith collide. I think the pressure of a deadline always helps. We have to move forward because this date is coming up or something, you know. So in the environment of the Plenary Council, we've got 10 months. So we start on the 3rd of October and we finish on the, don't quote me, 9th of July or something in 2022, 10 months later. And so the discernment can take the fullness of that time. It doesn't have to be done in the first six days of the first assembly. It doesn't have to be done by the second month after the first assembly, but it does have to be done. We have to have made some decisions together by, you know, the closing Friday night of the first week of July when in the second assembly. And so I think the pressure of a deadline can help with that. It brings clarity, it brings urgency. It also brings more heat to the disagreements. But the thing that Frank mentioned before, just quickly in passing, he mentioned the word trust. And I think the core to heated disagreements or passionate disagreements, being able to find a way forward in the way that Patty referred to before, where both people are transformed and there is a new way forward discovered, that's a little give, a little take, a little kind of proposal. The reason that heat doesn't overburn anyone in the context of discernment, I think, is trust. That you really do believe that that person has goodwill, that we are following God, that we are listening to the movement of the Spirit in the group. And it takes the meanness out of what can sometimes be human debate, you know, maybe in political situations or something. In a faith environment, in an environment of discernment, that absolute core love of God and the Spirit leading us, you know, is a very real, very present, very concrete reason that keeps us connected, even when we really disagree with one another. And I think that's important to that central element of trust is really important to keep working on.
All right, we've been going for almost half an hour now, and I think this is a pretty good introduction to just what's going on and just the sort of attitudes and dispositions. I think if we were going to go on, we'd need to be very specific and drill down into a few particular issues. I think it's a good start, and what we ought to do now is just close down and perhaps consider coming back later on some particular topics and comfort ourselves in the words of William Butler Yeats. Turning and turning in the widening gyre, the falcon cannot hear the falconer. Things fall apart, the centre cannot hold. Mere anarchy is loosed upon the world. The blood-brimmed tide is loosed, and everywhere the ceremony of innocence is drowned. The best lack all conviction, and the worst are full of passionate intensity. So I think that's a recalling of what the Easter Rising was like for the Irish in the immensely memorable words of W.B. Yeats. And let's hope that we are not just going to replicate that, where the best lack all conviction, and the worst are full of passionate intensity. We don't want that. What we want to do is reconstruct the Catholic Church in Australia. At this stage of my life, with one leg off, I'm actually now back living where I grew up. And I feel like turning and turning in the widening gyre, I've come back to the place I started and discovering it for the first time. And that's really what we're going to be doing in this, is coming back to who we are and where we are, and perhaps discovering it for the first time. So my thanks to you all, and let's see if we can't come up with a formula for doing something like this again very soon. Okay?
Thanks very much.
Thanks,
Michael. Thanks, everyone. Lovely to be with you.
Bye, everyone. Thanks, Frank. Bye, Patty.
Bye-bye. Bye.
Bye-bye.